President Trump's policies on immigration, refugees, and more have prompted millions of people to get off the couch and into the streets. But historically, which kinds of protest actions have worked and which have fizzled? L.A. Kaufman has spent decades immersed in progressive causes as a participant, strategist, journalist, and observer, from saving community gardens in New York City to protests against the Iraq War. Her new book is Direct Action, Protest and the Reinvention of American Radicalism. And L.A. Kaufman joins us from New York City. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, presidents have always faced protesters, but put this moment with President Trump into a wider context historically for us. Seems there are folks getting involved who've never been part of political action before.
Yeah, I mean, there are always, you know, waves that come and go of protest over time. But I think what we're seeing right now is really quite unique and unprecedented. There hasn't ever been a president who's been greeted by so many protests in his first month of office. And the character of the protests has been really extraordinary in their breadth, in their diversity, in the number of unlikely places that they've shown up. We're really seeing something that in decades of observing grassroots movements, I've never quite seen before.
Yeah, hundreds of thousands of people have been involved. There were estimates that more than a million people participated in the Women's March in Washington the day after Trump's inauguration. There were these Not Our President, President's Day protests and many smaller ones. Do you think the protest energy, L.A., is sustainable over time? We're talking about a four-year term at least.
Oh, I don't like the sound of that at least. I mean, obviously you can't stay in crisis mode and at a fever pitch for year after year after year. But I see a lot of people recognizing that this is a long haul and recognizing right now really what the movements are doing together is creating a crisis for the Trump administration and in so doing managing to slow down some of the worst of the harm. I think people understand that it's going to take a lot of different approaches, that it's not going to just be marching in the street. It's going to be the town halls, not just during one winter break, but over and over and over again. I think that the deep sense of fear and concern that people are feeling for the future of our country right now is going to sustain more of this than you might expect.
L.A., let's talk about scale a bit. As you point out in your book, Direct Action, the group AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power, or ACT UP, was never about being very big or having tens of thousands take to the streets, but they were incredibly effective. Arguably, they saved millions of lives. Talk about that.
Yeah, I really see ACT UP as the single most effective activist group of the last 40 years, because, as you say, the evidence is quite compelling that there are millions of people alive today who would not be if it were not for their work to transform the drug testing and approval process, as well as the way that medications for HIV are distributed. They were always pretty small, and they were always quite rude and obnoxious. I mean, ACT UP didn't go politely to ask for medications to be approved. People's lives were at stake. The people who were organizing were often themselves very sick and in the last months of their lives. And they were disruptive. Their graphics were very in-your-face. Everything about them was very polarizing. They created a crisis and they polarized. They also were very smart and they did their research so that when their protests got them access to meetings with government officials, they were very well informed and able to make very specific recommendations about policy changes. So that combination of the outsider and insider, but with the willingness to be bold and persistent, that was the particular combination that worked so powerfully for them and is a model for many other movements to look to.
And ACT UP had a sense that bigger was not necessarily better.
Yeah, there are times when all a big protest does is kind of demonstrate the scale of one's powerlessness. That's the way a lot of protests felt to me in the late 80s. There were a lot of times when it just felt like you can bring large numbers of people together, but what are you doing but shouting slogans, you know, about changes that are never going to happen. It was particularly sobering. I was very centrally involved in the big protest against the Iraq War in 2003. And the contrast between the millions of people who marched in the streets all around the world on every continent and the utter indifference of the Bush administration to those protests was really dispiriting. And it was a lesson to me in thinking about the limits of the mass mobilizing model. It's not always about how many people you can bring out. I mean, that does important political work, but that's not necessarily what brings about change.
Yeah, the 2003 Iraq War invasion protests largely made people feel good, but really had no wider impact.
I mean, they maybe made them feel good on February 15th. By about March 20th, we were all feeling pretty awful once the invasion began. I mean, the feeling better that you're alluding to, I mean, I think that's some of the work that the Women's March did, and I think there was real political power in that. You know, it's not in itself going to change the policies of the Trump administration, but wow, did it make a lot of people feel the collective power of standing together and a sense of possibility, a sense of hope that in fact, if we take action, if we step outside our comfort zones, we can change the direction of this country, not just 4 years from now, but right now.
You mentioned looking at ACT UP and looking at the success metric through a broader historical lens. You talk about in the book about the May Day 1971 protests against the Vietnam War. At the time, it was not well received. It was seen as kind of a dud. It's not that well known today. But you point out that many grassroots lessons came out of that May Day protest. Talk about that.
It was this attempt to shut down the federal government through nonviolent direct action. The slogan was, if the government won't stop the war, the people will stop the government. They really did bring somewhere around 25,000 people came and used their bodies and things like newspaper boxes and cars, with deflated tires and whatever else they could put their hands on to blockade the streets of Washington, D.C., to block the bridges leading into town and to try to shut down all business for the day. This was enormously controversial at the time because of how disruptive it was. But it also was incredibly unnerving to the Nixon administration. Here was a nonviolent protest. They couldn't be dismissed as, rioting hooligans. They were really holding to nonviolent discipline. But they were bringing what felt like the specter of revolution right to the doorstep of the White House. They made something like 7,000 arrests that day, the largest number of arrests in any day in U.S. history. But most importantly, what wasn't visible at the time was the Nixon administration decided they needed to speed up the withdrawal from Vietnam. They didn't want to face that level of unrest again.
And groups such as the Gay Liberation Front and others took some direct action lessons from that day.
Yeah, it was this moment when a bunch of movements that are now kind of called identity politics movements, the Gay Liberation Movement, the Women's Liberation Movement, the Black Power Movement and other Chicano Power and Puerto Rican Power, other movements, were still either in the upswing or still pretty powerful. And May Day was this moment when the model of a single left, a single unified party or organization where everyone follows a single leadership and a single program, started to give way to the model that we have now, which is a model of networked resistance, where we have a movement of movements. And that self-mobilizing energy is one of the things that I think is so extraordinary about the resistance that we're seeing now.
What's the main lesson you take from history? Direct action works?
Yeah, it's that protest works. It doesn't always work under all circumstances, but particularly when groups are willing to be bold in their tactics and persistent in their approach within the broad discipline of nonviolent action, but using the whole array of tactics, including the strongest ones. In those circumstances, movements win much more than when they rely solely on established channels of influence like lobbying or calling their member of Congress. It's the movements that are willing to take risks and willing to do bold action over time that are the most successful.
Writer L.A. Kaufman, her new book is Direct Action, Protest and the Reinvention of American Radicalism. L.A., thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.